It's Thursday. It's 10 a.m. Mountain Time, and that means it's time for Tom and Shane. And here we are. Our guest, special guest today is going to be Mike McCormick. But before we get to Mike's pearls of wisdom, we've got to let you know that, hey, subscribe to us. Why not? I mean, nothing will happen to you. You hit subscribe button, smash that notification bell so you'll always be notified whenever we have another podcast. And like us, leave a comment. YouTube likes that kind of stuff. They move us up in the search rankings when you do that. So we would appreciate that very much. If you'd like to support us monetarily, and why would you not? I mean, the great perks you get for supporting our show are in the description below. All the great things we'll do for you if you help us out, because there are some costs involved in putting this on. And we use StreamYard to do these, and you can see we can have guests, we can have all kinds of people on the screen at one time. It's great. And the other thing we need to remind you of, the award-winning Tom and Shane, the Swiss Army Knives of Business and Politics, we are writing on Medium.com. Medium.com, you can go over there and check it out. In the description below, there are links to both of our articles, or our article pages, so we hope that you will take advantage of that. And today we want to talk about, let's end the government theft of our assets. So that's why we have Mikey here to talk about that, Mike. And I think what we need to start with, people who work their whole lives to amass some kind of a portfolio or something to leave behind, how can you protect that? We want to talk about that today, protecting your financial legacy.
Well, thanks for having me, Tom. It's great to be here with you and Shane. And Tom, that's a great question. Protecting your family legacy, that is really something that keeps people awake at night. Certainly once you've managed to navigate through what we're dealing with, Tom, you're right. This is really one of the greatest concerns out there, is how can we protect what we've made, what we've built, what our parents have built, what we've been able to achieve in this environment and able to hang on to it. And protecting your assets and preventing them from being taken from you unjustly is something that we focus on always with all of our clients at any asset level. And when you're looking at protecting what you own and keeping it taken unjustly from you, there's a few things that you can do. Umbrella insurance is really one of the first stops that we recommend for anybody that has a net worth beyond their insurance limits. That's getting up into the $1 million or $2 million level. And these days with real estate, it seems like that's becoming awfully common. An umbrella insurance policy is best done through who you get your auto and liability coverage for, any other assets that you have. They'll be able to add it on. It'll fold in nicely, and it's incredibly affordable. It's a term type of insurance where you just pay an annual fee for it. And if you should have a fraud connected against you or a claim made against you, this is extra help that you would have behind you. And the second thing that we recommend these days is cyber coverage in some form. And that cyber coverage could be self-designed, where you use a password manager. This is something that you just have one password for and it remembers all the other ones for you. We recommend that you update your software and your telephones regularly. These are things that are usually designed to keep a patch there and keep bad people out. Lastly, if you want, you can look into a cyber coverage policy that may be specific. It may be tied in with that umbrella coverage I mentioned to you. So those are ways that you can protect your assets being taken from you unjustly. Mm-hmm. Having taxation, you know, that's a personal view on how you think that that is valid or unjust. But the reality is, it's a reality. The IRS will get paid. And in doing some clever planning work and working with professionals and understanding the current laws, you can never evade the IRS. That is not why we are here. Those are laws. That's part of being a citizen. But there's things that you can do to ensure that you're not paying more than you have to. And that's what the rich people do. That's what the clever people do. And that's what I think a lot of the show will be able to cover. So I'd figure I'd pass it back to you, Tom, and see how that initiation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we that's kind of what we want to talk about here. I'm sorry I got you out of order.
That's the lead in. You have to cover these bases, Tom.
Yeah, no.
In terms of making a protective financial house, You need to have insurance things in place. You need to have your own protections and cyber coverage.
Yeah.
And you certainly need to look into some of the additional coverage you might need.
Shane, I know you've helped people protect their financial legacies. You've been a stockbroker and you know, a money manager and whatever. Thoughts on your side of the ledger?
Well, it always comes down to two things: the amount of money you're talking about that you know you're wanting to protect or have a legacy with, and then you know what you can do that is allowable, as Mike has pointed out. You need to find a manner in which you can create the protection that may not be there in a will. Probate is a terrible thing, particularly for a large estate. It can take years, you know, if everyone doesn't agree to what the will says or the lack of a will. And so you want to avoid that. The probate is a really bad thing. Most states in your country and mine, they haven't, you know, really upgraded to the 21st century with regard to, you know, probating an estate. So the executor of an estate is all powerful and very often, well, sadly to say, especially in family estates, corrupt.
Yeah, can be, certainly, I guess. Let's move on to gift tax, Mike.
If you don't mind, Tom, I'll keep it back on the previous one and I'll just wrap it up and I'll
roll
it
into
the gift tax.
Yeah, no problem.
Because the last step, once you have built up a net worth and you've protected the other ways that we discussed already, is you would look into a trust. You'd look into establishing a legal entity that could hold your assets. That's where a lot of this tax protection, if you will, tax efficiency in terms of planning, that's where a lot of it relies. And you should be using an expert. I am not a trust attorney. There are many out there that are excellent. And if you're looking for one, please feel free to contact me, but I work closely with them. And so in today's show, I'll try and give you an overview of how they look at things and see what might be applicable to you.
Yeah, we're going to talk about trust in detail here in a few moments. I wanted to also touch on gift tax, because there is a certain amount of dollars you can give as a gift without penalty. But there are also, amounts that Uncle Sam is going to swoop down and take a big chunk of that away from you.
Well, this is how it goes, Tom. There's two kinds of taxes that most people are familiar with. There's the income tax, where when you work a job, you make income, you have a business, you make income, you pay taxes on that. The corporation, if you have a C corp, that pays taxes on it. But you can also own an asset that can increase in value. And when you sell it, there's a tax liability that goes along with it. Your strategy of not selling it might be a good one, but gifting it out sometimes can be a great strategy as well. And when you gift to a charitable entity, they don't pay taxes on it. But if you give it to your friend or to your child, that tax liability does transfer along with that. And so how do you manage that tax liability in gifting? There's two main laws that we take advantage of. There's the annual gift exemption. In this country, we're allowed to give away $16,000 per taxpayer per year and not tell the IRS about it. It's called an annual exclusion gift amount. It goes up every year, indexed for inflation, and right now it's $16,000 per taxpayer. So a grandparent who has six grandchildren can give away six times $16,000, and their spouse, another taxpayer, can give away another six times $16,000 annually, and that is unaccounted for assets. And these assets could be of any form. It could be, so long as it's valued at 16 or less and you're able to prove it, it could be a car. It could be a small building. It could be a guitar, I guess, like I have in the background. Now, the second rule that we have is, there's a lifetime amount that you're allowed to give away also. And this gets into advanced tax planning. Right now, that amount is $12.06 million. So you're allowed to give away basically the family farm during your lifetime and have that be excluded from a gift tax from the IRS. These limits are put in place really to help the normal person, the person that would be the rancher, the person that would be just wanting to help out kids. There's exemptions for paying for tuition. They are there to help people do what we want to do, but they're not there to help large, large wealthy families keep money out of the system for a long period of time. And so these exemptions, these limits, the 12.06 is now per taxpayer. And so those limits mean that, Tom, you'd be able to give away 12.06 per in your lifetime to wherever you want. And that is all free from any taxation.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty good. Are there gift taxes in Canada, Shane? Shane's in Canada, I should mention, I guess, for the people who aren't aware of that. So,
well, any resident of Canada who receives a gift will not have to include it in his or her income in any given year. And any person under the current law in Canada, a parent can have a lifetime limit of gifts equal to 11.7 million Canadian. So the federal estate tax laws provide that a person can give up to that amount during their lifetime with an estate worth up to or more than 11.7 million.
All right. Well, let's move on to the inheritance tax. That's one I think a lot of people know about, Mike. If someone dies, if you're a farmer or you have a successful business, there's a lot of liability on the line for taxpayers who find themselves in that position. Many people take out insurance to cover the payment of that sometimes. But let's delve into inheritance tax a little bit, if you would, please.
Thanks for that question, Tom. The inheritance tax, it's also known as the death tax sometimes, and estate tax. It's something where above a certain amount, the IRS wants to get paid. They want to put in additional tax. And as I always say, if you can't tax dead people, who can you tax? But it is a double taxation in some regards. Today, the exemption, again, $12.06 million per taxpayer. You can pass with that amount and gift it out of your estate. And those assets would have a step up in basis and be able to go on their merry way to your inheritors tax-free. But anything in excess of that is subject to an inheritance tax, an estate tax, a death tax, which can be as high as 40%. Some states also have their own additional death tax. Montana is not one of them. Connecticut is. And so a lot of planning goes into making sure that your taxable estate when you pass is beneath this level. And I should say, Tom, in today's laws right now, in 2025, this exemption will sunset and revert back to a lower level. And I'm showing that lower level is going to be $6.2 million per person. So it's going to go down significantly in a short period of time. It's likely to be extended, but these laws governing these amounts are usually tied to inflation and usually sunset. And so these are things to always be current on. Right now, what we're looking at is your inheritance tax limit being $12.06 million. That does include any reportable gifted amounts that you use for your lifetime too. It's complicated. You should use an expert. And if you have that size of an asset, land, boats, business, cash, marketable securities, add them up. If you have that sort of level of assets, you should be working with an estate attorney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I would suggest too. Inheritance tax in Canada, Shane?
There is no inheritance tax in Canada. After the executor reviews the estate and files a final tax return of the estate, what's left over is paid out of the estate and transferred to the various beneficiaries, untaxable. The great thing about it is it doesn't include real estate, although the principal home of the estate can be sold, and there's no tax on the capital gain. Any other property held by the estate, though, that is sold, there is a 50% capital gain on the profit.
Yeah, you ready to move?
No, we have a far better opportunity here for living and dying people in Canada than you do.
Okay, I was going to say, you ready to move to Canada? You ready to move to Canada, Mike?
I agree. Let me continue.
Oh, by the way, you get a 31% benefit. You know, coming here.
Go ahead, Mike.
Sure. Well, part and parcel with this inheritance tax limit, it is part of the same law, is that in the United States, there is no step up in basis for assets. Mm-hmm. There is. In the United States, there's a step up in basis for assets. that happens when you pass. And so if I bought GM stock during the last, before the last crash, let's take a better example. If I bought Apple stock back in the 80s and I held on to it and I passed, I died with it. My heirs would get a step up in basis and they'd have no tax liability if they sold it. There's no taxes due so long as it's, we're below the the $12 million estate limit. So that is hand in hand, and it's highly beneficial for everybody that falls below this $12.06 million estate tax limit. We get step up in basis when we pass. This is where rental properties really do well, is that people will own them, they'll pay them down, they'll have huge appreciation, they'll have huge taxable capital gains. Keep them in your estate, pass them on to your heirs. If they choose to sell them, they will have no taxes due unless there's additional appreciation after that.
And the irony of that and the amount the U.S. government's picked, as Mike pointed out, is that the baby boomers and regrettably what's left of the great generation, you know, they're still well over $28 trillion. It was around 36, but a lot of them are retired or passed, but still around 26 trillion. So, you know, the politicians for the last 40 years seeing this and knowing this is happening are hoping that, you know, they'll secure that to supposedly pay down the debt. Laugh out loud, won't happen.
All right. Let's move on to trusts, if we can. There's all kinds of trusts. There's real estate trusts. There's irrevocable trust. The list is probably too long to cover here, Mike. But
it is.
Let's talk a little bit about trusts here.
Well, yeah, you have over 36 different types of trusts.
Hang on, Jay.
I'm just pointing that out.
You'll get
giving context. I'm giving context for Mike to run. Go run, Mike.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. And talking about trusts is something that that I frequently do with clients, and then I frequently refer them on to an expert because they are complicated. But an introduction to trust is that there's two basic kinds. There's the kind that you give your money into this entity that you create, but you really still get to control the entity. You get to decide what the assets are invested in. You decide if you get some of the money or you want to gift it. That's called a revocable trust. And that's a common thing for people. That's like first base for trust. They're going to set you up with a revocable trust. It helps you avoid probate. It helps you with some flexibility and some customization on how you want your assets treated. We do that all the time for clients. An irrevocable trust is also known as a grantor trust. And this is the kind where someone is gifting money, not to a person, but to an entity. This entity is a trust where there's a trustee that honors the directives of the trust. There's a beneficiary of the trust. And then there's the entity itself that usually has its own tax ID number. Now think about this. You can gift money into this entity. And this entity, if it holds on to that Apple stock of the previous example, and never sells it, it can just grow indefinitely and never pay a tax on that gain. The IRS doesn't like things that keep them from getting paid on any taxable event. And so what they would do is they would say, okay, well, we have a lot of rules governing this. And again, this is where you work with an expert on creating a grantor trust. But all the different kinds that Shane referenced of how many trusts we can have out there, 27 is what I hear. Most of them have to do with the following of the taxation, who owns it, who's controlling it, and who's reporting it in the grantor or revocable trust world. Gifting money out, well, hey, there's that $12.06 million limit that we're at per taxpayer right now. You can put that much money into an irrevocable grantor trust. The beneficiary on this trust could be a grandchild. It could be a charity. It could be another entity, perhaps. This can get incredibly complex, and you can do incredible things for charitable interest, for future generations, or just protecting yourself and your ability to enjoy your assets and not pay taxes on things that you don't need to sell. And from the CRUT to the Dynasty Trust, there's different states that have benefits of working with them. Lately, we've seen Wyoming really hit the headlines, and South Dakota as well, in terms of privacy treatments, in terms of longstanding. This trust, when does it actually die? If nobody actually ever dies, is there ever a tax due? These are questions for the estate attorneys and the IRS to wrestle out, but this is what the big dollars do. The super rich know how to play these rules, not to win, because again, the IRS always does do okay, but to be winning might be the expression.
There you go. Okay. Any trusts in Canada, Shane? Variation of the American type trust?
Absolutely. Basically the same, yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, one of the trusts that we wanted to talk about in detail is the Dynasty Trust, which can be set up perpetually to go on forever, Mike, in some cases. It can just keep accruing money. It can start with a few $1,000s and a few 100 years could be billions. So let's talk a little bit about that one.
Great question, Tom. The Dynasty Trust is sort of elusive, it's a tool for the uber rich, and it generally is. It's really another term for a generation skipping trust that's been around for a really long time. And when you are extremely wealthy, your assets, and this is your business, this is your farm, this is your real estate, this is your portfolio. These days, there's more and more people that are exceeding these limits, and they want to set up something beyond their needs for future generations. Who doesn't want to have a family trust out there that will help with education or hard times out there? And so these estate attorneys, and I always recommend working with an estate attorney, will set up a trust where there'll be an exemption amount of $12.06 million per taxpayer that allows you to contribute that much into it at one time, create a grantor trust for the benefit of future generations, not the immediate generation below you. This is a generation skipping trust. And these beneficiaries will roll down the line as they service different spouses, different family members over time. The livelihood of this trust depends on its administration. You end up working with a fiduciary, usually a trust company, making sure that all the filings are up to date and all the valuations are up to date. The IRS is, of course, wanting to track this stuff, but it's governed by state law, and state law is king in this regard. And so I suggest you do good research on where you're forming your dynasty trust, because they'll have a huge impact on how long it lives. Tom, you alluded to they can live forever. We don't know that yet. That hasn't been tested. Each one of these trusts.
Yeah, well, it's true. Yeah, it's...
Forever is a long time, right?
Amen to that. Yeah. So it is. Yeah. Shane, any thoughts on dynasty trusts? I know you've looked into them as well.
Well, of course, allow me to give an example. The interesting aspect of a dynasty trust, as Mikey's pointed out, is the reason it's called a generation skip trust is it's not granted to the children of the grantor, but to the grantor's grandchildren. And if you look at the Kennedy family as an example, Joe Kennedy left a very significant fortune, didn't last a generation. His children basically spent it, and it's gone now. It was gone by 1980, which is pretty sad, but that's what happened. So generally, someone that has a great amount of wealth has issues probably with their children. And so this is a great way to move it past the children to the grandchildren and assure at least the second generation. I always, whenever asked by clients about trusts, I always said that, you wanted to make sure there was unanimous consent in any trust agreement for the future, particularly dynasty trusts, where whoever the grandchildren were and whatever the number, they'd have to have unanimous consent. They'd have to all agree what to do with the trust. It couldn't be, a 2-3 split or a 1-1 split. So it prevents any kind of family disagreement as to how to manage or how to get rid of assets in a trust.
Yeah. All right. Well, we wanted to cover this today because it's extremely important, Mike, that we know some of these things, because people are sitting out there and maybe they won the lottery, maybe they got an inheritance they weren't expecting or whatever, and a lot of people, as Shane talked about with the Kennedys, just go out and blow it. Why spend the principal when you could spend the interest? So it seems like a no-brainer to me. But what do you think on the overall? Is there a preferred way to do this? Is there a one size fits all place you can put this large sum and protect it as somehow?
Well, Tom, when we're talking about dynasty trusts, we're talking about grantor trusts. We are talking about beneficiaries that don't have full access to the corpus. That's the term for the amount that you contribute into the dynasty trust. 12.06, the current limit, that's $12.06 million. And that's a significant amount. So why wouldn't you want to restrict that principal from being accessed for future generations?
Sure.
26-year-old great-grandson that thinks he's a rock star. You know, you don't want to let him have the keys to that. So being able to put it in an irrevocable trust and having a professional trustee is what keeps them at arm's length. But he's still the beneficiary. That means that based upon the terms of the trust, there might be income support for education, might be a living stipend, might be special allowances for any family member in the future that might be disabled. There's all sorts of flexibilities you can put in there. But being able to restrict what happens to your money in the future, yes, you can do that with a dynasty trust. Being able to control what happens with your money down the road, the idea is that the control is given up. You write in that these are the types of things the trust can invest in. Maybe it can only invest in oil companies, or maybe it can only invest in green companies. You can do things like that, but you will be handing the keys of that over to a corporate trustee of some kind, and you will effectively be keeping your future heirs from looting it and turning it out to zero.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, any final thoughts, Shane, on what we talked about
today?
Yeah, I do.
All right. Look.
What a surprise.
I won't comment.
Go for it.
Okay, so trust is an important aspect, at this point for the wealth, even up to $1 million or more in an estate. But the particular disadvantages are the costs, because you have three principal costs, the cost of lawyers, because you have to file documents, either state or federal, every year, whether it's tax returns or a review of them. Accountants, they're not cheap either, and they have to do the accounting again. You have to have absolutely amazing record keeping. Another surprise for accountants to charge essential costs. And you have no protection from creditors with a trust. And the final thing is limiting choices to the people that will inherit the trust isn't a good idea. A trustee isn't a good idea because you want a legacy to the trust and you want it to survive generation after generation. Certain states require a number of trustees. Better to have family as trustees and have some guidelines how they make decisions, not what decisions they make.
All right. Final thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, this is one of those things that you got to use an attorney for. There's budget ways to do it, unless you're savvy or have somebody really help me that's savvy. I recommend that you can use a professional for it, but it's good to be aware of what's out there. In case you win the lottery, in case you've been a lucky person of the economy working hard, a lot of assets, there's ways to protect it from being taken unjustly from you.
Yeah. Well, the most important way that I know to protect your money is to subscribe to this channel, because otherwise you're just going to be taken to the cleaners by unscrupulous con men, unscrupulous lawyers, dubious accountants, and everyone else. So please subscribe, ring the notification bell, and let us know. We also do more writing on these topics. Shane and I both write on medium.com, and the links to our writing is in the description below. And we hope that you will take advantage of that as well. We write on a whole variety of topics and things. So check that out in the description below on YouTube, and we'll put it on our other broadcasts as well. Mike McCormick's contact information also will be in the description below so that you can check with him and see what what he's up to. And Linda, watching us, thanks for the great information. We appreciate that, Linda. Thanks for watching us. And we hope you're doing well. And Mike, thanks so much for being here. Shane, always a pleasure, man. Always glad to do this with you every week.
Well, thank you, good sir. Mike, yeah. It's good to see you.
Hey, yeah. Great to see both of you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hey, and don't forget, we're on radio this Saturday, 8 to 11 Mountain Time by Bounce Calculus. That's 2 days from now. And you can hear us live anywhere in the world, KMMSAM.com. Just click listen now. Nothing to join, no signups, no email, no credit cards. You don't need anything. All you need is your brain, your ears, and you can hear us checking that out. And our previous shows, if you missed any of them, hey, they're same place, KMMSAM.com. Just click on Tom and Shane's podcast, and you will be taken over there. Immediately. So once again, thanks Shane, thanks Mike, and we'll see everybody, we'll talk to you on the radio on Saturday, and we'll see everybody with our next podcast next Tuesday.